Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. This is broadcast number 703, and it's May the 27th, 1985. Gary Trudeau had a cartoon, his famous Doonesbury, yesterday, where Mike and Mark are walking along a lake, and one is saying, "I can't believe all this Germany gaffes will just roll off him, Mark." And Mark says, "Why not? He escaped the brunt of responsibility his whole career." "Yeah, but I keep thinking people will start to see that." And Mark says, "They already do, Mike. It just doesn't matter to them. People like the whole idea of Ronald Reagan, of the unexamined life, far too much. To be critical of Reagan is to be critical of themselves. And the need to feel good about oneself is a very basic yearning." There were a few more comments in the cartoon, but they're not necessary. That's the main point of that cartoon. Now, I have one announcement about a project I haven't mentioned on the air before called the Ribbon Project. It's just completed. The woman whose idea it was is Justine Merritt. She lives in Denver, Colorado, and she wanted to express some feelings about atomic bombs and atomic war. The 40th anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki will be recognized on August the 4th in around the world and in Washington, D.C., so she started a ribbon project, and one woman in Santa Cruz described it to me as the largest grassroots folk art project ever to take place in the United States. That's her quote. "The original goal was to have panels sewed together. We all sewed pieces the same size, the same length and width, to wrap around the Pentagon. It can't touch the building, heavens forget that, but it can be on sticks, and the ribbon could go around the Pentagon." So that project was started, and now so many have been completed that the ribbon will be tied and wrapped around Washington, D.C., August the 4th, and it'll go around the Pentagon, the White House, and the Capitol building. The Fuhrer and his wife will be out at the Eagle's Nest, so they won't be there to put any negative vibes on the project, and miles of ribbon will be put together. I made one with six angels on it. I've been sewing it for five months. And then I embroidered the words, "Fear of war spoils children's dreams." And then in four places in big letters, I have, "Please, no war, please, no war," and repeats. And these will be photographed. There's going to be between 50 and 70 photographers from the Smithsonian Institute. They're going to be photographing each one of these panels, and we sewed our names down at the bottom. And there is Mae Bressel from Carmel, California, with little flowers around the name and the angels playing in fields of flowers, begging not for any more wars. I'm going back to Washington. I'm going to try and go there August the 1st. The demonstrations and the tying of the ribbon and whatever there's going to be associated with it will take place, as I say, on the 4th. I would like to get there the 1st of August and help with putting it up and doing my part in being there to make some kind of a statement. I think the atomic bomb did something to the entire world after that that has never changed the psyche of people. They talk about yuppies and hippies that grew up and the affluent society, the unquestioning society. To question society is to recognize your own doom. And that gets back again to what Doonesbury or Trudeau is talking about, and recognize our own frailties and the things we can't do that we want to do and our own weaknesses. And this generation has been brought up to not think about tomorrow, to not have a home. They really don't think in terms of a future or tomorrow. There's always, well, when the bomb falls, or I'll have one more cigarette because when the bomb falls, or I may as well live it up because of this, or I may, it's not going to last. And there really is no certainty or future. This generation has spent their money. Each one of them has put, what does J. Peter Gray say on television? How many thousand? Each baby born has sold his home, his own home, for a piece of that MX missile or the Star Wars that's going up. And it's a terrible thing to think that the whole world has lived, particularly the sophisticated world. The educated are the people that know that this thing is out of control and they really don't even want to participate or do anything about it. So they prefer just watching it like quicksand, you know, sucking them into it. And this action causes their behavior to be a hard, calloused, indifferent behavior because of their own inadequacies and laziness and the cloud of the bomb always over their head. Now, this is an expensive project. Each of us just bought a panel, but just putting it up, the mechanics of it, If any of you want to send a contribution to Justine Merritt, JustineMerritt, P.O. Box 2206, Denver, Colorado, 80210. If you want to send her anything towards the project because you didn't sew one or couldn't sew one and didn't know about it, one of the nice things about it was that the information came from grassroots of people working with peace organizations. So it wasn't a thing where they advertised, help us tie up the Pentagon, and all these people put in things that they just put together without the love and care. This project actually comes from children are doing it, and women, mothers, parents, and people without families who still think that war is terrible, that the bomb was terrible. And I think it's a major expression of love and something that will show the kind of feeling that went into it. Now, the second thing I want to announce is that I'm going to begin a talk show with John Arlen. He's asked me to share his time. He has a talk show on KFMO AM station. This is at the top of the dial in our area out here in the West Coast, 150 up at the very top. And we're going to begin a new project together. He's had his talk show for quite a long time on that station. But starting, this station has Michael Jackson in the morning and is going to be carrying Larry King and his talk show. And they have Owen Spann, who formerly was on KGO. So there are a few people that have been on the radio a long time, but I don't think, in all modesty, that they're as knowledgeable about a lot of this information and have done any of the kind of research that I have done and that John is interested in and is going to share. So this is your chance to call in and ask questions, and this will go down to Big Sur. For a strange reason, KAZU doesn't get down that way, but there are areas that this will reach that the other stations don't reach, and then the ones that overlap, they can call in and ask questions. Another item I wanted to bring up with you was the San Francisco Library. The librarian in charge of documents called and wants a copy of everything I've written and interviews about me, and they'll put them on file in the microfiche, and then people from any library in the United States can put in a request and search and get those, and I won't have to be copying articles, and they'll be available to people all over the country, and all I have to do is refer them, and they'll have a list and index of the various articles and reprints, and then you can make copies for yourself. Also, they're willing to have, and we talked about keeping a notebook, several notebooks with the sheets that accompany my broadcast, and they'll have a tape library. They have one already. Some of you have taken the broadcast for many, many years. I don't know what you do with the copies that go back as far as 1977. If any of you want to share those with the San Francisco Library when this project gets rolling, I have to start it the week after next, besides the new radio program and all this news, but I'll get the tapes up there and the articles. And if you want to share any of those, they're welcome, because the expense of duplicating them, of course, would be tremendous. And if you have copies that were sent by the tape center, if you have a machine where you can put them on a less expensive tape and send that copy, it would be fine. I can't use the ones that were just taped off the air, because sometimes there are problems with those and interference. But anything in the terms of back tapes that you're not using, the ones that you want to keep for your library, keep them. If you're not using them, then they'd be welcome, and we'll put them into the larger project where people who have not been able to hear World Watchers all these years can go back and get these back tapes and choose subjects like the John Kennedy assassination or Kramer versus Kramer or Watergate or the Jonestown or the shooting of John Paul II or the murder of John Paul I and various events. People like clusters of tapes on Alternative 3 in the space, and this way they can get those, and then I'm sure their interest will be whetted to see how those particular subjects fit into the main thesis that I'm trying to share with you. Now, last night on 60 Minutes, they did a segment again on the trials going down in Argentina. They've done one before, and an interview with people down there. The government changed hands, and now three former presidents are on trial, and six of the military, there's nine on trial altogether for all kinds of charges, including the one of the mass murders. There were about six items in that particular segment that really caught my interest, and I just wanted to quickly share them with you before I go on to some other material, because they're important. They showed buildings where gasoline was thrown on them, they were burned alive. They discussed where hundreds and thousands, maybe 1,000 or more, were dropped out of airplanes and thrown into a river. How the mothers protested every Thursday, went to the government, how people went to the police, and the police said, you're not a proper parent, go home, you weren't fit to have the child. And the thing that overthrew the government wasn't even the financial debts that they owed. It wasn't the torture. It wasn't the killing. It was because the generals lost the war at the Falklands. The British won the war. So the people got rid of their generals. And the changes in society, the changes for better, getting away from a dictatorship, fascism, oppression, sometimes doesn't even have anything to do with the actual acts that happen. They're not humanitarian reasons for the changes. They may be economic, but the pain of seeing people tortured or hurt, that didn't bother the people in Argentina. It was the fact that they lost a war. Just like having Richard Nixon, Crook Nixon, into office, the Scotch tape got him out of office, not all the dirty tricks and crimes he was doing up to that time. The second point I want to make is that the women were talking, one in particular, who had lost three children, and she told how they defied the ban and how they started to meet, and there were a handful of them, like six or eight, and then more of them met, but it was the women that were out there doing this work, and they were called the locos. Everyone in Argentine referred them the crazies. Now, I've heard Mark Lane talk on the radio about me being crazy. Harold Weisberg will say she's crazy. Paul Hawk has a newsletter. He works with Bernard Fensterwald. He'll take sideswipes at me in his newsletter. Any aspersion. People like Jonathan Marshall. These people stay far away from Mae Bressel, the loco. You know, like, don't get those ideas that are crazy. And that's the way they referred to those women in Argentina. Well, the locos turned out to be people who are now responsible and recognized in Argentina for what they did, because they didn't band and they stood out despite the aspersions, and they still meet every Thursday. And one of the women said that she was doing this not only for her children who died, but for all the people in the world. Now, another point on the broadcast that came loud and clear to me was that the church and the news media and the Jewish community did nothing about the various, we're talking about up to 30,000 murders, not 30 in Atlanta or 35. And even then, there should not be a moment's silence about that covering up of those murders, even if it's one murder. But the Jewish community went along with the German Nazis in Argentina. People think they're protected by the Anti-Defamation League, the welfare groups, B'nai B'rith. Forget it. The only one that you can account for is yourself. You cannot rely on them, it, him, her, or anybody, only yourself. And then they mentioned the conspiracy of silence, that everyone kept quiet as each person went off. They thought the military was doing a good job. What they realized then after the Falkland War was that law and order and having the streets quiet at night isn't the only thing that matters. And all of a sudden, something like $30 billion was out of the Argentine banks. And now the New Democracy has this tremendous debt, and they're complaining that they can't meet the payments on the debt. The debt was left by the murderers, and the people thought there was law and order going on all the time. Now, I suppose many of you saw another article on the Korean jetliner, how the pilot misled, according to a Japanese report, where he was. Just a few weeks ago, we talked about the Korean airline because of the discrepancies in the tapes that the Americans that had the tapes threw them away and didn't keep them, kept them 24 hours. They recorded conversation. This new article is important. And the reason Korean Airline articles stand out in my mind more than a lot of other stories is because on that airplane was Larry McDonald, the president of John Birch Society, the president of Western Goals. The staff of Western Goals included John and Louise Reese, and Louise Reese worked for Senator Joe McCarthy and Robert Morris. And the military people and spy people on Western Goals is a who's who of espionage. Very important people. And John Singlaub and Edward Teller and Admiral Moore and Roy Conan, these people were not going to allow Larry McDonald to testify in 2 weeks about their computer into the police departments in the United States. The latest story is that the pilot of the 747 took manual control the last minutes. He didn't rely on automatic pilot. This was brought out in a trial in Japan, and the document endorses the fact that when he asked to go to, he was at 33,000 feet. When he asked to go to 35,000 feet, that's when the radar found that his real altitude was at 29,000. Now, the newspaper goes on to say that the discrepancies can't be explained by the radar's margin of error. that the pilot wasn't telling the truth about the change of altitude. He said he was one place when he actually was another, and they can't figure out why he wasn't telling the truth. He was sitting for a while with a member of Congress, Larry McDonald, who not only represented the Bird Society, but Congress. And the important thing about the article I wrote concerning Korean Airline for Larry Flint for the Hustler magazine in February of 84 was the altitude changes. And I wrote one of the mysteries of Flight 007. Number one was the lack of conversation between the pilots, between the United States, the Korean, and the Japanese. Because remember, there were three well-known or well-experienced pilots on this Korean plane, 747. Well, it turns out there was conversation, but the tapes were destroyed. Then I went on and wrote about the difference of the altitude and how Chung requested permission to elevate to 35,000 feet. And moments later, he shouted, "Rapid, rapid decompression," and was hit by a missile. Now, they claim in these recent discoveries that he switched from the automatic. People were trying to find out how a plane like this with automatic could possibly go off. He switched it from automatic to hand control. And what I believed was that the pilot was under a condition of mind control, that he was a victim of hypnosis and was receiving instructions from some source, either other pilot or by radio back at communications. And that this plane, there's evidence, was bombed right after that and blew up. But the conversations went from manual, from automatic to manual for whatever reason. And the playing around with the switch at that time didn't make sense to put it. He could have stayed on automatic and let it take him to Seoul, South Korea, if that's where he was supposed to go. Now, the people, as I say, on Western goals are who's who of espionage and intelligence. But one of the key figures of all of that that I keep bringing out is General John Singlaub. And, of course, Dr. Hans Senholz, S-E-N-N-H-O-L-Z, pilot from the Luftwaffe. And Mr. Wigner, who works for the Pew family, strong fascist. The term is anti-communist, but violent, pro-fascist. And I've done other broadcasts. I'm not going to talk about that now. But Singlaub is important because at this point, his connections, and I've been trying to illustrate since March, the connections of John Singlaub with the World Anti-Communist League, with Western Goals, with AmeriCures, and about eight foundations that are very important to running our government and our military separate from decisions that Congress makes. That they are an army of their own, that they are doing the death squads, that they are linked to Reverend Moon, they are linked to the Vatican, people like Prescott Bush and J. Peter Grace, and now their connections are warming up. Of course, they were linked to Henry Kissinger because he makes all the policies in Central America, and Fritz Kramer is Henry Kissinger's mentor. But now they're all coming to a head and include, of course, Joseph Mengele and Liberty Lobby. And I'll try to make this as clear as I can for a complicated subject because I've been doing it for the past 2 years on Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer and the last part of this year on, the first part of this year, rather, on John Singlaub. I'll try to make this as clear as I can because the pieces of this huge puzzle that I said in November, December were coming together are doing more and more, and I want to give you some examples of the way it is coming to happen, the interconnection of these people. There's a small article in the newspaper in the Los Angeles Herald. None of you saw it. It was a bombing of a former school teacher's house, and just the front door was blown off, and that's not too important. Considering that all those city blocks were bombed out in Philadelphia and 61 homes were lost and 11 lives, here nobody was killed, but the bombing was very important. The article is written by Mark Warnick, W-A-R-N-I-C-K, bombing of ex-teacher's home probe. He blames the Jewish Defense League. The teacher is George Ashley. He's German. He's 56 years old, a former teacher at North Hollywood High School, and John Francis Polytechnic High School, and he would teach the students that only 700,000 Jews died, not 6 million. And Ashley is on the advisory board of the Institute for Historical Review. It's owned and run by Willie Cardo of Liberty Lobby. And they are defendants in a trial going on now. The man prosecuting them is Melvin Mermelstein, M-E-R-M-E-L-S-T-E-I-N. I mentioned Mermelstein's lawyer hanging up on me when I called and told him that money from the Institute of Historical Review, the people they were prosecuting, was put into the bank account of Joseph Mengele April the 12th, 1985. Well, George Ashley was angry that his house was bombed, that the door came off. As I say, nobody was hurt, but the Los Angeles Herald said the front door of the house caused substantial damage, according to police. Now, one of my friends who has been working on the Joseph Mengele case for quite a few years, who told me about Fritz Steinacker, the attorney for Joseph Mengele, who puts the money in his account. They were the ones that told me about John DeLorean's money for cocaine going to Klaus Barbie into the account of Joseph Mengele and Mr. Steinacker. I mentioned him last week. He finally made Newsweek magazine acknowledging his relationship currently with Joseph Mengele. And the man who took the money over to the bank in two particular cases, there may have been 1,000, of course, I'm only talking about two particular, is associated with the, he works with the Associated Press. He's associated with the Associated Press for the past 30 years. And I mentioned his name is Howell Buell, B-U-E-L-L, because I gave the story to a writer from the New York Times, Ralph Blumenthal, and they take these stories and they do bits and pieces and never acknowledge the years of work that these friends of mine have done or I have done on trying to find these particular characters such as Martin Bormann and Joseph Mengele and Klaus Barbie. Of course, they knew where he was long before he was deported and put into a prison in France. Now, Mr. Buell got a message last week on his telephone answering service saying that the message was, I'm going to give you practically verbatim the way it came, although it wasn't, couldn't be written down. The notes were taken from the answering service. This is Doc calling from California. When I got involved in this project, you people promised me protection. And this is the second time they bombed my house. And this time the bastards, I guess we can use that word, blew my front door off. If I am to continue in this project, you people have to guarantee me either more protection or more money. And if you, and I can't use this obscenity, are serious about this kind of work, you better spend more time in the office so that you can see the completion of this serious work, or I am going to deal direct with Europe. Now, the reason I share this with you is that he talked about the house being bombed and the front door being blown off, and I got a call from back east asking me, what do you know about a situation out there? And I said, sure. It's the Liberty Lobby, the Institute of Historical Review. I just read the article this week about Mr. Ashley's house, and the trial's going on down there in Los Angeles, and it's his institution that allegedly sent recently $22,000 to Joseph Mengele's account. What I gather here is that they are carrying the burden for some of the payments to Mengele because it's getting more expensive to keep him and pay the people who are keeping him. Now, for the past year or several years, I've been talking about a convoluted amount of names that some of you follow in the proper order and can refer back to your past tapes and follow. One in particular was March 25th, 1985, broadcast 694, where I talked about the World Fascist Meeting, World Anti-Communist League, and how it got formed and how they're meeting with Ronald Reagan, sending a message to them that congratulating them on their getting together. And some of the members at the meeting are Strom Thurmond, Phyllis and Fred Schlafly, Charles Edison, former Secretary of the Navy. William Buckley is a member of the World Anti-Communist League, and he's a Knight of Malta from the Vatican. Jake Garn from Utah, Jesse Helms, Lev Dobryansky, he's the publisher of the Ukrainian Quarterly, with links to the Waffen SS and the Eastern Division, the brutal Nazis that fought and did the mass exterminations in the eastern part of Europe. Also on the board is Marvin Liebman, American Chilean Council, and Stephanie Possonay, P-O-S-S-O-N-Y. Possonay is on the board with Fritz Kramer and Lieutenant General Daniel Graham. And our president was sending greetings to them, and I gave a history of the World Anti-Communist League, and then also on that broadcast referred to General Heine C. Aderholt. That's the partner of John Singlaub. And he had the Air Commando Association and an organization called AmeriCares that distributes private aid down to various countries that is linked directly to the Central Intelligence Agency. And I referred to this group as identical to the Freikorps, F-R-E-I-K-O-R-P-S, a group of paramilitary that worked with the military but appeared to be on the outside, where were the intelligence system, the spies, the military that worked with Adolf Hitler that promised this continuation of the Thousand-Year Reich. Now, they were under the protection of General Ludendorff, L-U-D-D-E-N-D-O-R-S, and I was talking about their mercenaries from the Waffen-SS. This was before the president went to Bitburg. This was in March when I was referring to the Waffen-SS, and he didn't announce the intentions until April, and how they were trained in torture techniques by the Waffen-SS for global operations, and that the Nazis and the neo-Nazis recruit and glorify war. And on the sheet that goes with that broadcast, I talked about the common bond of these particular people in our Pentagon. Now, this Mr. Buell, Hal Buell, the courier, the alleged courier for the money of DeLorean's cash, I'm talking about a particular case to Klaus Barbie that ended up in Joseph Mengele's account, is a name that has stayed in my mind. And an article in Covert Action was published. It was published in winter of 83. And several researchers looked this up, reminded me of it. I had it here, and it didn't ring a bell 2 years ago, those names. But this is about a World Medical Relief Group. The first article about it was written in Cleveland, published in the Cleveland Plain Dealer. And it's about World Medical Relief Group and the CIA and their connections. And I'll give you the details of the article. But one of the couriers for the CIA, working with John Singlaub of the World Anti-Communist League and of Western Goals with LAPD and the military, and Heine Aderholt, and working with other members of the intelligence community such as Daniel C. Arnold, was a man, Edgar Pop Buell, B-U-E-L-L, who got the World Medical Relief money and distributed it. And I took that article from Covert Action and put it on a section of my study at the desk and kept it there since March because I wanted to check out the relationship of Hal Buell, the courier, with Edgar Buell, the distributor of the CIA money, because one was working with a Mr. Kramer who went to Europe, with the Institute of Historical Review, which is Willie Cardo, with money into the account of Nazi war criminal Joseph Mengele. And the other one was working with another team that fit hand in glove and connected together. Now, I had, as I say, the name of Edgar Pop Buell, but this week it came together. He is 20 years in the State Department or more. He is the uncle of the Hal Buell, and he is the man in the State Department who is in charge of this Freikorps, of this secret army, who has some title in the State Department. And the other one has a title with the Associated Press. A man and his uncle who connect to Fritz Kramer, Henry Kissinger, Joseph Mengele, Klaus Barbie, the World Anti-Communist League, the death squads all over the world who are in our State Department. When Joe McCarthy said there's a communist in the State Department and shook his fist and had 1,000 names, he couldn't prove any of them. I can now say there are Nazis in our State Department running the State Department and funded also by the Vatican and the Knights of Malta, and shake the list. And this time the fruit will come out of the tree and be proven to be right. We'll take a 1 minute break and then go on to side two of this very important information that is coming together, because investigators from Frankfurt and Europe have been hired to go and find these pieces, and the connection of the two Buells came through those investigators. I can't do it myself. I don't have the money, but I've pushed the clues to the breaking point where they had to go further, and now they've come up with a lot more information.